Welcome to the Level Up Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Alex. I went from being a cop to an eight-figure entrepreneur that helps average people like you and me make money every single day. I created this podcast to help you get motivated and to crush your goals. Let's win together. Remember, I have your six. Get ready to level up right now. Hey guys, welcome back to the Level Up Podcast. This is Paul Alex, and today I have a guest that defines leveling up, guys. Okay, not only is you did it all, dude. You did nightclub from Vegas to Miami. Now you're doing charters. Now you're doing digital consulting. He's doing fractional COO, chief operation officer operations, guys. Man, wealth of knowledge, Humberto Dominguez. Welcome to the podcast, brother.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for coming in. So, Humberto, brother, start from the beginning, man. How did you get into entrepreneurship? What made you want to get into the fields that you're in right now? And tell us about yourself, man. What's your background?
Sure. Originally I'm from Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
I came to Las Vegas in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And I came from a military background. I came from a military background. I had no clue what I was getting into when I got to Vegas. And Vegas was such a hospitality-driven industry. So quickly I got into the nits and grits of what happened in Vegas, how I could become someone in Vegas. And without really knowing anyone, I got into my first nightclub, Rum Jungle at the time at the Mandalay Bay.
Dude, I remember the Rum Jungle.
And
That was the pregame.
It was insane. I mean, the fire dancers, the congas playing. It was a really, really cool vibe. And it set the precedent for where I was headed in that industry. I started up as a busser and eventually made my way up to the bar. Eventually, 04 down the road, now we open up the Wind, bar backing, busing, eventually bartending. We open up a town nightclub in 05,
dude, at
the Venetian.
Let's slow down this real quick, because right now you don't understand, dude. You're talking my time, and you know I'm old school millennial,
right?
So it's just you're talking about 2022 to probably early 2000s, dude. It is the era of nightclubs Vegas, EDM, Tiesto. I mean, you got the hitters right there, right? You got me fist pumping, amazing. So, number one, what made you pick Vegas coming from Venezuela, dude? Were you just drawn to Vegas because of the nightclub industry or the hospitality industry? What was it about Vegas that you were I want to go there instead of California, instead of Miami? What made you make that decision?
It was just a little bit of luck, I guess. I had second uncles in Vegas at the time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And was lucky enough to at least land there, thinking, I branch out that way. Maybe family helps.
Yeah.
Family doesn't always helps that way, but it worked out at least to get my foot down there. And
in 2022, how old were you?
In 2002, I was 19 going to 20.
Okay, 1920, dude. So yeah. Oh man, you're
just a kid.
Yeah, just a kid, dude. Figuring it out, enjoying life.
Yep.
I love that. So you get on there, you start going and getting your first gig. You said as a busboy, and then is it true in Vegas? It's all about your connections.
100%.
Really? So you knew somebody to get that job as a busboy?
No.
No.
No, I mean, 100%, it's all about connections. And if you don't have them, you really have to work hard to try to get somewhere and be something. Vegas will still give you a lot of opportunity if you're willing to actually put the work. And there are so many different outlets, so many different venues, and so many different things happening all at once. There is always going to be some job to fill and something to show what you got. So that was an opportunity I didn't really think I would get, but it was given to me, and it worked out fine to at least start that path into that industry.
How long were you a busboy before you got connected with, I guess, someone in the nightclub industry?
As I started busing, I started making those connections. I started meeting people. I started meeting promoters that eventually became VIP hosts. Started meeting supervisors that eventually became managers that became directors, and so on. And it's a whole cycle that keeps growing. And as you actually come to see it years later, now you have all these people that at some point were just like little bossers that now are running entire venues, printing $100 million year revenue sets in Vegas. And it's very impressive.
Mm. So basically your friends, your connections, family members, associates, they ended up just getting these different jobs in the nightclub industry. And then finally, who was the one person that was just like, hey, Humberto, I think you would do really well with like helping us launch, you know, these nightclubs, dude, because, you know, working with, you know, some of the big names that you're talking about,
yep.
Dude, that's massive. Like, I tried doing that. I was a nightclub promoter back in California, and I was thinking, like, dude, how can I get in connect with these guys, you know?
Well, there was this one manager. He nowadays is a vice president for Tao, mm-hmm. Jacob Wood. And he was probably my first angel in the industry.
Who was your mentor? Would you call him your mentor?
I would say he had a lot to do with it, yeah. He was very, very open to giving me a chance. At the time, I barely spoke English to begin with, like horrible accent. And this is still back at the Rum Jungle. I'm actually studying to keep the job because I had to like pass all these tests, and they were all in English. I'm like really trying to get it, but it's a lot of information. And he left the place he set me at to actually take this test, and I ran away to a locker room to try to like rewrite everything from the manual into the paper, not because I didn't know the information, but because I actually couldn't quite remember how to write XYZ.
Right.
And he turned into this locker and he saw me there. He's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, he needed to fire me right then. And like, I was like, hey, man, it's not what it looks like. Like,
yeah.
I'm so sorry. Like, do you not know this? Like, oh, absolutely. I mean, like, you can quiz me verbally. I'm happy to tell you all this verbatim. Like, and he did. And he was like, wow. I mean, like, you actually are not kidding. Like, you actually know all this stuff. But, damn, okay, I'll help you out. Like, and he actually, like, took the
time to, the like, time invest to into actually, you.
Yeah. And from there, I mean, like, that relationship grew. When he went to the Wynn, he's the one that actually, like, gave me an opportunity to come and work with him and the group at the Wynn.
How was it working for the Wynn, dude? I love, like, the Wynn Hotel, Encore Hotel. I mean, I think it's one of the best, you know, establishments in Vegas still.
It is.
In 2025, dude.
Yep.
You know?
Opening up the Wynn was truly on a whole different level. Like, the level of quality they wanted to imprint in all employees from the beginning was superb. Like, and it was actually going from the line cook all the way to all the presidents and vice presidents and anyone in
it's
between.
Top tier.
It's top tier, and you actually see executives, or at least like back when we opened it, you would see executives walking through the casino floor, picking up little papers and like tightening up chairs and like smiling and guiding people, and it was very like very sophisticated at the time.
And what year was this?
That's 04 to 05. Mm-hmm. Then, I mean, like, nightlife, again, is a very, very competitive monster. Like, the Wynn at the time did not have that vision yet of how to reinvent themselves or how to incorporate nightlife into their bloodline. It was a little too uptight for the industry. So, same mentor... Jacob Wood, he had another opportunity, and he goes now to open up a Tao nightclub coming from New York at the Venetian. And, like, he talked to me about it. He presented the opportunity. I took it. I came and worked with him, and it was probably the best decision in that nightlife era.
Okay, so at this time, you know, you're – in your younger 20s.
Yeah.
You're about probably what, like 23, 24?
About, yeah.
Yeah, 23, 24. You get the opportunity to work with your mentor to go ahead and now open one of the biggest nightclubs, Tao Nightclub, over there at the Venetian, dude, which I remember back in the day was super hard to get into. Like I was telling you before the pod, dude, like, bro, like me and my boys, we used to go and like probably like give the bouncers like $200 to get into there. Because if you're not a girl in Vegas, you're not getting in as a dude. That's just the way it is. That's how it used to be, right? But yeah, man, it's amazing. So what did your mentor have you do when you like launched it? Like, what was your primary responsibilities with that organization?
I mean, back then it was still really very front of the house. Like, hey, like, I'm going to make you a barback. I'm going to make you a bartender. Like, see where else we can groom you.
So to, like ancillary. So you were like, like here, we need help with this. So you were like, you were like a utility guy. Like, dude, I'm going to do everything because I want to be here.
And I was very grateful at the time. And
that's awesome.
Like, this guy was actually giving me the opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I had a show for him, you know, I had to like really show like the best qualities I could give the company. And
that's awesome.
So I did. And, it was a great experience. I mean, like back then, like every headliner wanted to be at Tao. Like all celebrities, like dying to go into Tao. Paris Hilton at the time.
I was about to ask you.
The Kardashians, like coming around. Like Scott Disick actually had a big little video downstairs at the restaurant where he like tried to show off $100 bills on a server's mouth or something. I forgot exactly what happened there, but it was quite funny. It was all like a shit show of mishaps, but it was great. It was very, very vibrant at the time.
What would you say is your most memorable artist back when you were helping launch Tao Nightclub?
Man, I can't recall what year this was. I want to say 06.
Mm-hmm.
We had one of the wildest nights I remember still to date, even in comparison to like bigger headliners. It was when we had Eric Murillo. Probably like second run we had with him. First time he came to Tao was not all there was supposed to be there, but second time around, it was the craziest level of energy I've seen in a nightclub. Like, for the longest time. Like, this guy kept playing till 9 a.m., very space, club space style, at a place that should have shut down at 4 a.m., and people were still dancing.
Going
crazy.
The place
was packed. Like, managers, directors, hotel executives were coming up, and everyone was
they were probably pissed, yeah.
No, at first they were, and they saw the energy, and they were like,
they're like, we're going to let it ride.
Fuck it. Like,
I love that.
It was really, really different. Back then, like, the only thing similar after hours you had was Dre's. And this was an attempt to be an after hours. Mm-hmm. It just so happened that the energy
extended.
Never died. Like, it's the only time I've seen something like that was not a festival or something that of that capacity.
Yeah, because I remember back in the day, dude, like when my nightclubbing days, and yes, I used to nightclub guys. I know I'm aging myself, but the nightclubs in Vegas, they would go till like 6 a.m., but usually they would die around 4.
Yeah, you 4, start seeing like.
And then people would start trickling to Drake's.
Absolutely.
Right? But that's cool, man. I love that. So from there, what else did you build in the nightclub industry in Vegas before you really got into entrepreneurship for yourself?
Well, that's all like front of the house, like little stuff. Then eventually in 2011, I got my first management set in now over at Chateau and Gallery.
I remember Chateau at Paris. Yes, sir. We're not talking about Paris, France, guys, even though it was legit. I just came back 2 weeks ago. We're talking about Paris and Vegas.
It was nuts. It was really, really a lot of fun. It was a very different vibe and a very different format.
Bro, you were probably living it up where you were like, I'm never going to die. Like, what was your drink of choice?
Oh, man, like, whatever
people were. You're a tequila guy?
Yeah. I mean, like, it was like, back then it was whatever people were drinking.
I had
people drinking Fernet. I had people drinking Jägermeister. I had people drinking vodka.
Jägermeister. Yes. I remember those days.
It was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough because, I mean, like, now I had, like, a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
And the one part no one really prepared me for was the amount of hours
Yeah.
I was going to now be subjected to, like, work.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't all that much fun anymore. Now I actually really have to show, and I have to, like, schedule people, and I have to, like, understand the dynamics of the venue and the ordering and the bookings and the marketing and so many, like, different so many different fronts that really go to run a business, right? I mean, like, ultimately, like, nightclub or not, it's still a business, and it requires the same thing. It needs people coming in and people spending money. And understanding and learning and understanding the dynamics of how to actually, like, how to make that profitable, how to make that, like, successful, how to actually keep people motivated to actually, like, want to, like be supportive to your business. It's all, like, in the dynamics of a management that you really, like, start learning and earning as you actually grow in the industry.
So what's the, I mean, obviously me and you know what's the main driver of revenue when it comes to nightclubs, but for the people that are listening right now and they're probably, like, you know, a college student, or maybe they're our age and they're like, dude, I want to try being in the nightclub, right? Because a lot of people, I remember back in the day, they were like, bro, how'd you get into the nightclub? I was like, I just networked, bro. Like, I was just a friendly guy. And one day I went to a nightclub promoter. I was just like, hey, dude, how do you do what you do? And he was just like, well, you got to start from the bottom, dude. You know, it's the same thing, the come up story, right? And people don't understand. It's just like your network is your net worth. I've been saying this 100%. All this morning, dude.
Yep.
Like, it really is. Like, you might know one person who's going to get you in, just like your mentor, 100%. Right? Mr. Woods. And when he moved to the other group, the Tao group, he brought you with him, dude. And that's usually what happens when people change in management. So, you know, if you're trying to go to Vegas, you guys got a network. That's just all it comes down to, you know?
And same goes with, like, I mean, like, the people you know, like, if it's about party and, like, you see so many high rollers and so many people, like, really well-connected. And then you see, like, their group with them. And that group, like, with them, I mean, like, some might see them as groupies. Some actually will be true friends. Who knows? But, like, they're really the ones actually enjoying, like, the most out of a club at that point. Like,
yeah. No, absolutely, man.
Yeah.
So what would you tell somebody who right now, okay, if they were trying to go into, I guess, the Vegas nightclub scene, how would they get started? Like, if you were to go ahead and break down to a beginner. And I know, when did you end up leaving Vegas to come to Miami?
I came to Miami in 2017.
Okay. So it's been some time, and you probably still have the connections. You probably still know a lot of people. Yep. But if you were to go ahead and tell a beginner right now that's watching, listening to this, and they were like, dude, how can I do what Humberto did? Like, I would love to work with Tao Group. I would love to go ahead and open a nightclub over there, or maybe be a promoter, you know? How would they get in?
Build your network. Like, really, it comes about trying to build your network, be sociable, like, talk to people, like, smile, like, shake hands, like, come to events, like...
So actually attend.
Introduce yourself with the intention and the mission. I mean, like, if that's that's the desire, yeah. I mean, like, this is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to do it. Like, have a plan, not just randomly go get drunk and, like, hey, like... I tried, like,
yeah.
Guess I'll try tomorrow again, right?
Like, yeah. Like, actually have the intention to go and network.
Well, of course. I mean, like, that's, like, depending on what you want to do. I mean, if you just want to be, like, work in the industry and have fun in the industry, like, all groups really have all types of fun auditions that people can go to. They're very overwhelming. They're thousands of people deep. Just to select a few hundred or less. The groups, the community you build in those settings is very, very special. It's like you create bonds with these people. Sometimes, I mean, like, there's, as with any business, there might be a lot of cattiness in between, like, who likes who or how certain things flow, as it becomes a little bit of a high school all again.
Like anywhere else, any work environment, it's the same, yeah.
As a whole, it's very, great. Very special community, and, like, it really connects you with a lot of people and opens up a lot of, like, later on opportunities.
I love that, dude. I love that. No, and that's good, man. I mean, that's how I got into the nightclub scene. Like I said, I had friends in it initially. I went to the events. wasn't really a big time drinker back then, but you know, at the end of the day, I was able to get in and yep. I was able to learn operations and all that, and it was good times.
Yeah.
So, Humberto, from the nightclub scene, okay, what was the transition that you did from the nightclub scene in Vegas, and what was your primary reason to move to Miami?
Sure. So, in Vegas, over time, I had the opportunity to keep growing in the industry. I got to go back to Tao Nightclub, now as a manager. Eventually, I joined Hakkasan Group and got to go to the back end of the house into a more director-based role within Hakkasan Group, like now overseeing a lot more venues and doing a lot more things for the company. And that was my first take at actually building like more intricate systems. Like my main forte has always been a little more into programming and like building like certain sets of financial analytics and things that can actually put data into action. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that for Hakkasan Group, and it became a bit of a niche for me. And that opened up an opportunity here in Miami, into a higher role, now more as a director. So I took that opportunity. I had a president of nightlife for SBE that offered up an opportunity to come and join them with Delano and SLS.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very, very nice opportunity. I flew to Miami. The concept made sense. I mean, like, hey, like, you speak Spanish, you're Venezuelan, and there is such a thriving Venezuelan community.
Huge.
In Miami. You're going to do great. On paper, it sounded fantastic. When I came here, at first, it was a bit of a cultural shock. Like, I mean, like, I came from Vegas. I spent so much time in Vegas. My main Hispanic community was the Mexican community. So I was probably a little more used now to eat tacos than eat arepas.
I was about to say that, brother. You were right. I mean, you got Vegas, which is a few hours away from California.
Absolutely.
So you got a lot of Mexican people. I mean, I'm half Mexican, half Peruvian.
Okay.
So, and I'm originally from California. So, I mean, you cannot beat the Mexican food over there, bro.
100%.
You know, and it's a lot different over here. People love to eat Peruvian food,
yeah.
You know, and there's so many other things that you can eat down here. So I'm pretty sure it was a big culture shock.
So was
that the biggest difference between Miami and Vegas as far as the nightclub scene, or like how's the nightclub scene compare here in Miami compared to Vegas?
Well, Vegas, you have like such a big format, like all A-lister settings everywhere you go, like, and they compete with each other in such a casual way, and you're actually talking about people making $1 million sets, like the sets play for like Cascade, Tiesto.
And you're
like,
talking about like, DJing.
Yeah, DJ wise, yeah. Like, you're actually like seeing like all these big formats where like these guys are being paid
millions,
like half a million, who knows? I mean, like contracts are all different, but for like a 2-3 hour set, like, and you actually have those compounded into a full year contract agreement where these guys will come and play for 2-3 hours, and each time they play, they're actually making.
Isn't that crazy?
It's insane.
Doesn't that blow your mind? Like, anybody that's listening to this or watching this right now, Humberto's like, there's like no way, because people can't even think like that these DJs, they're famous, right? Like Cascade, Tiesto, Avicii, I mean, Afrojack, Stevie Aoki, like all these great, you know, EDM DJs back in the day. And they still are. They're still great DJs, but like that was their prime, yep. Right? They fly in on a jet, land in freaking Vegas. Get in a limo, get dropped off at the hotel, and then at like 1, 2 a.m., because I remember I was a club goer, I'd be like, hey, they're supposed to be here at midnight. They don't get there till 1. And then they show up, and the whole house just goes crazy, insane for the next 3-4 hours.
It's great just times. Like a festival, but yeah. Nightly.
Yeah, nightly.
And it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of work. Here is a little more consolidated. I mean, like, the only, like, true, like, big nightclub format here, in my opinion, is Live.
Mm-hmm.
Found Blue as a whole, like they try to run a somewhat Vegas format, which is cool. It's very nice. We have also there that I also opened down the road here back in 2019. But the big guns, I think, like really come down to Live. And, well, of course, 11. 11 really built like a whole structure of their own.
Yeah, they did.
And a lot of it with the Vegas mindset and like or at least like a little bit of Vegas infusion to it. And they made something phenomenal, something that doesn't really exist anywhere else.
I think 11's concept is very unique because it's a mixture of, and if you guys don't know what 11 is, 11 is actually one of the bigger nightclubs here in Miami. And even in 2017, when I first came to Miami to actually just check it out as a tourist, I checked out 11, I checked out Live, I checked out Club Space. All these famous nightclubs that people still go when, you know, they're in your younger 20s, 30s. I even had my younger sister. She came to visit me here like a couple months ago. And they went, her and her husband, they went to Club Space at 9 a.m. in the morning. And I'm like, 9 a.m. in the morning? And she's like, yeah, we're waking up at 6 to get there at 9. And I'm like, you are insane. And there were still people going from the night before, bro. They were giving out orange juice. I was just like, this is insane,
it's
right?
It's crazy.
Yeah. But anyways,
I came to, what was the question again?
Yeah, so the question was, so Miami, Vegas, biggest differences. You said in Vegas, it's the sets. It's basically, it's bigger.
It's, I mean, like it's everything. The promotions, the
it's more grand.
It's like nothing you find anywhere else. I have traveled to many different cities, and I mean, like, I've found in every city something special, but specific to Vegas, like, that grand element, like, is unique to Vegas. Like,
yeah.
You can't match it anywhere else. You don't have thousands of people on a weekly basis to fill up, like, all these different clubs, like, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And I mean, in Vegas, I mean, like, thinking of like venues I was involved with, I'll think of Omnia at Caesar's Palace when we first opened it. It's a venue with 100 tables. Venue with 100 tables printing a couple $1 million a night. Like, wow. I mean, like, that's
insane.
That's a lot.
Like, what is the biggest night you have seen in your experience while at Omnia or any of these other clubs? Like, what is the most they've made in revenue?
I want to say possibly New Year's at Omnia. The 2 New Year's I spent at Omnia were both like around 2-3 mil. And they were nice. Insane. They were really, really like something else. There were some special nights we had at Marquee. Mm-hmm. At the Cosmopolitan, that we had a very, very special wealthy guest that would come back in the day, Jolo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever heard of Jolo, mm-hmm. a Malaysian.
Yep.
And the amount of money he would drop was
insane.
Insane. Like, I mean, like, this is like the times, like, it was mentioned Jolo would be traveling with DiCaprio or would be traveling with the Kardashians and all that. And, like, now, like, you have the entire champagne cooler, like, millions of dollars worth of champagne ready to actually, like, go out. Like, it was quite a different time.
No, I can imagine, man. I mean, I feel with the nightclub industry, but then also how Miami is growing.
Yes.
As a city.
And that's something that's been like progressively changing here now. Like, it's really like Miami started to set its own tone, its own vibe that stands away from Vegas, like, and makes its own piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Like Miami, like, of course, I mean, like, early 90s, early to late 90s, early 2000s, you had like a lot of like the push of the boutique hotels, Ian Traeger building all this boutique hotel concepts, and then replicating all these concepts in Miami Beach. That was a very, very special time to Miami Beach. And then the European bottle service in Vegas kind of like toned that down. It became more like that grand element. Now it's going back more again to the that boutique experience. Like, what else is out there? Like, not just the DJ, but what else can we actually like? Can we find out of the like going out element, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely, man. So you came into Miami, and you're in the nightclub scene heavily here. When was the transition after you came from Miami to doing your own thing, to actually expanding to what you're doing now?
COVID.
So 2019, 2020?
2019, 2020. In 2019, I had a little itch to try to see how it could go about me doing my own thing, my own consulting. Unfortunately, I mean, like, when you're working like a 9-to-5, to call it 9-to-5, you don't really have all this much disposable time. You have maybe a little bit of disposable time, but is it really? Because you still have a family. You still have, like, things happening. So how do you balance that? When COVID happened, that 9-to-5 eventually wasn't there anymore, because there were, like the entire hospitality industry in Miami shut down.
Yeah.
Like,
and the world.
The world shut down. The only thing really thriving in Miami at the time was the boat industry.
So that's interesting. The boat industry. Okay. All right. I see where you're going.
Yeah. The boat industry.
So 2019, 2020, everything shuts down. You're like, holy shit, I'm in the nightclub industry. What am I going to do? So then how do you get into boating, dude?
Well, COVID happens. No one knows what to do. Like, literally. Like, hey, by the way, like, the world shut down. Like, how do we pay for rent or pay groceries? We have to, like, figure something out. Like, looking into what was still working in Miami. Boats were actually working in Miami. So I decided to bring the consulting idea I already had, like, somewhat founded in 2019 into action, and I form a plan, not the best one yet, but like some sort of plan, and like then polish it. I mean, like, running venues for this long, like, it was the same recipe no matter what. Like, it was just a different industry now, right? Like, so I'm thinking. So how am I going to, like, fix the problem? I'm actually looking for a problem I need to fix. And in doing so, okay, like, this actually feels natural. Like, it's not, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to apply it. And I actually, like, went out and I took a leap of faith, and I actually started trying to, like, again, build a network and contact people, like, just as many, many moons back in a whole different industry, in a whole different city. And started trying to make connections enough to place me or position me in front of someone that could have some interest in what I had to actually pitch. Mm-hmm. And so it happened. I mean, like, there was, like, in trial and error, I got to meet this one gentleman running a boat club for many, many years. Mm. This boat club had been in Miami since the 80s. And it had died down a little bit. He had other assets and other businesses and other things, and he just didn't have the right tool set to make his business something again.
And he didn't have the right operators.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I felt like the problem wasn't all that significant. It just wasn't being properly handled. And I actually, if implementing the right solutions, the right tools, you could easily like.
So at that time, Roberto, do you think it was his marketing? Do you think it was his fulfillment? Do you think it was his sales? Like, what was going wrong that, like, you saw that you could fix?
Well, it was a combination of everything. It was a combination of marketing, a combination of logistics, strategy, operations, lack of SOPs, lack of like systems in place in general. I mean, like, from invoicing to hiring to anything in between. Like, I mean, like, the running a business, a small business, a big business, like, it still has a lot of the same logic behind it. You still want to achieve likely a way to generate leads, whatever those leads are. Like, some might be in the form in a digital form, some might be in person, some might be to take a certain action. Like, what's the action that's gonna happen, right? And in this case, like, the pipeline was all broken. There was no head, no tails to
no funnel, basically, no process,
nothing.
Wow.
So, okay, well, like, this actually seems like a low hanging fruit here. Like, hey, like, I can fix this. Like,
and then, Roberto, before you get into that, because I love this how you're breaking it down, dude. It's awesome. For the viewers and then also the listeners that do not know what a boat club does in Miami, what would you say a boat club does in Miami?
So boat clubs came as a relevant structure in different cities back, I want to say 70s, 80s, with the promise or premise to allow people to take a boat out without owning the boat. I mean, like, yep. The same.
Like Turo.
Yeah.
Like Turo, like Uber, like yeah. Like Airbnb.
It's like the simpler format would be a boat rental.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, I mean, like, in a boat club, you actually are somewhat of a member of that community.
Exclusive.
And it's more exclusive. You have more almost guaranteed accessibility to the boats.
Different options.
You have different options. You actually have someone that's actually upkeeping the boats, that's maintaining the boats. You, if you're in the right boat club, the boat club likely will be rotating these boats every so often. So you always have, like, somewhat of a newer opportunity. And you don't have to, like, really, really worry about the hassle of finding slip. Like, if you actually put dry storage, having the boat store up and down, the maintenance elements of the boat, all the safety equipment, the cleaning of the boat, the maintenance of the boat, all that actually, like, is a daily routine for a boat.
Mm-hmm.
The boat club eliminates that. Of course, you can actually achieve somewhat of a similar reach if you actually just go ahead and rent a boat, but you rent whatever you can find. Like, yeah. Like that, that's probably the bigger difference. And back in the day, of course, you didn't have the technologies you have nowadays. Like, mm-hmm. Nowadays, you actually have so many tools, so many apps, so many, like, at the click of a button, you can actually, like, rent something very easy. And, like, that the industry itself, like, changed drastically with that. But back in the day, like, you had newspapers, you had, like, maybe some Google, like, search or something. Maybe you found what you actually wanted, but it wasn't as simple.
So in the situation where you got your first boat club, okay, and you were going to go ahead and help with the operations, the marketing, the sales, and the fulfillment, how did you end up, I guess, turning the business around?
Well, the 2020 market was a very generous market. Again, with everything shut down.
Because people were, like, looking for things to do. Yeah.
Boats happened to be the hot commodity in Miami. It was in the news everywhere. Everyone was judging.
That was the thing to do?
Yeah.
Go on a boat.
Yeah, and everyone, of course, was judging Miami. Like, oh, wow, like, look at all these Floridians, or, like, look at all these, like, degenerate people. Like, yeah. Oh, everyone
you
should be.
You degenerates on your boats.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no one really cared. Like,
yeah, they're having a good time.
Like, social distance, like, what social distance? Like, the water didn't require social distance type of thing. And, well, I mean, like, of course, like, back then, like, no matter what, like, every regulation that we could follow to, like, upkeep and actually, like, bring up, like health standards and what have you, it happened. But it was a little more about building an opportunity for people to have fun and still, like, somewhat have something to do.
Yeah.
So what did I do back then? I mean, like, I look first at what was there, what was there financially, what was there, like, assets wise, what was there in regards of structures and operations and anything in between. And then from there, like, okay, well, like, let's see what's broken in this whole pipeline. Like the lead intake was horrible. Like, it was actually just people calling the owner's phone number. If he actually answer, fantastic. If not, like, oh, well, like, that sale is lost.
Yeah.
The booking process was almost like on a napkin. Or like behind an envelope, like, I'm like, whoa, okay, well, that's a problem. Like,
yeah,
there are so many cool systems. Like, why are we not using like all the systems? Like, oh, like, never needed to. Oh, now we do, and we can actually like really capitalize that and make it a lot more efficient. And things like that. I mean, like, then of course marketing. Hey, like, we actually need marketing. We actually want people to come. Maybe back in the day, the competition wasn't that great. Right now, it's a big, big competition. How are we going to compete? Like, how are we going to get in front of all these people, like, when we need it most? Like, oh, we go and shake hands and talk to them. Oh, like, well, like, the, now, like, this might not be the right time to just go and shake hands. It helps.
Because of COVID. I mean, we can't do that no more. We can't go and shake hands, man.
So luckily for us, we have tools that we can actually implement and actually make money. Oh, but that's going to cost money. Yeah, of course it's going to cost money, but it's going to make us a lot more money. And that's like the mindset, like some business owners might be a little afraid of when it comes to marketing, right? Like, oh, well, like you're telling me to do to use these tools. Some of the tools will cost money, and like you're telling me to do advertisement, and this advertisement will cost money. But all that's really like just a little fraction when you actually look at the big picture. And that's what the one thing you need. You need to look at the big picture.
The big picture is the ROAS, the return on ad spend. And, you know, a lot of people and a lot of business owners, especially, you know, nowadays, I think, you know, what you're doing is remarkable. And the reason why is because you're helping, let's say, baby boomers. You're also helping people that are not knowledgeable with the technology that is out there right now to leverage and grow businesses, dude. And it's humongous. It's powerful, right?
Very powerful.
Especially since COVID, man. It changed the world.
And it changed the world. And it was a beautiful opportunity because it was the only opportunity where I felt safe and comfortable to, like, get out of my comfort zone. Like, hey, like, I got to make money somehow. How am I going to do that? Like,
So break down the day where you were like, bro, this is a game changer. Like, I got to do this full time. Like, it's happening. Like, I got to go all in.
Of course. So 2020, it was a work in progress. I also had my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she has two kids. And Miami's not cheap.
It's not. It's expensive.
And I'm just giving this idea a test run. But I'm still not making money.
And how long were you in it? Were you in it like 2-3 months and you weren't making money? Or were you in it for like a month and you weren't making money?
I want to say like 6 months went by and I wasn't still making enough money.
Dude, a lot of people would be like, man, I'm giving up on this. I'm going to go get a 9-to-5.
And it is a lot of pressure because, you have a family now. Like, how responsible or irresponsible am I now?
Exactly.
If
it's on you.
If I don't take action, like what, like, but I trusted my system. I trusted my approach. I trusted the process. I mean, like, and the process is not something that happens overnight. Sadly, like I wish I actually had a magic wand, right? Like, to just tap and like, wow, okay, cool. Now
fixed.
We're all rich. But it takes time and it takes takes effort, and I put the effort. I fine tune things in between, like even with a plan that you actually like need to also like it's like act on your feet and actually know, like, recognize if you actually need to tweak things to improve them. And so I did for this project, and the project within 6 months or so, it really started actually turning and making money and money and money and money and grow. And I'm like, okay, well, fantastic. This is exactly what I work for. So, great.
Was your customer, like, excited? Was he like, dude, what are you doing? What scam are you pulling, bro? Like, you know, people always are scam.
But. Well, at that point, it became more of a very close relationship where, like, we actually became partners in the business. Like,
oh, wow.
Hey, like, you know what? Like, be my COO and like just run the business and like make the right decisions. And like I don't even want to think about decisions. You actually obviously like know what you're doing. So you go ahead, take the right decisions. Let me know at the end of the month how the like what the numbers look like, and we're all good.
What a smart man! See that, Emilio? That his business partner delegated operations to Humberto, and that's what an entrepreneur, when you develop yourself as a business owner, that's what you want to do.
Exactly.
You want to delegate, right?
And I mean, like, yeah, of course. At first, I took a lot of the burdens of like every piece of the puzzle, but on the same token, just as you're mentioning, now I actually had the opportunity to delegate further down and actually like systemize things and automate things. And now like that, I actually had a very like full picture of what needed to happen and how we needed to make it happen. I could take that and actually replicate it. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I decided to do at that point. Like, hey, like, you know what? Okay, this worked phenomenal in this one project. So let me actually replicate it again.
So what was it that worked so well, I guess, for that first business? Was it, were you running ads to it? Were you, did you build like any custom funnels for it? Did you focus on SEO, which has to do with Google, guys, for any beginners that, you know, is just getting into marketing right now? SEO, you know, ranks your websites. And if you're ranked number one on Google, when people are looking at, you know, boat charters in Miami, boom, you pop up. And that's... Right. Brings a lot of cash flow. So like, what was it that you were doing that was working so well for your guys' company?
Well, yeah, we optimized marketing. That was a very, very needed position to make. We tried to identify where the leads were coming from. We tried to like better utilize Facebook pixels and like anything that could actually give us like additional data. We try to like really, really define or hone into what the right advertisement should look like. And ultimately, when it came to the SEO, try to expand it a little more from the traditional search engine optimization to search everywhere optimization and really inject it everywhere. Try to inject it in like not just Google, Instagram and Facebook, but injected in anything and everything that could actually like touch a possible lead. Mm-hmm. And the results were actually very significant, because now we actually went from seeing a company that barely had $2,000 in its in the bank account to having almost $500,000 within a year. Like
amazing.
And of course, as you actually like fine tune it, like it's just money growing and money that's really being made. There were poor decisions being made before where like the company was not reinvested in itself and just assuming all the revenue was just
profits
and like
fastest way to go bankrupt.
And that was a horrible leak in the pipeline. Ultimately, we actually were able to fix it. Hey, like, you know what? Like, this is actually company's money, and this is how we are going to utilize it. And this is how we're going to make now not $500,000. This is how we're going to make $2 million. And this is how we're going to make XYZ factor. And it worked out very nice.
I love that, man. So you kept reinvesting the profits back into the business to optimize your marketing 100%. And your fulfillment and absolutely everything else. So, okay, so that happened in 2020. You got your first company. You flipped it around after about a year. So now we're going into the end of 2021, 2022. How many businesses have you helped thus far up to 2025 till right now?
So in the same level, I want to say 9.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I mean, it's not something that happens overnight.
Of course.
And it's a very, very well paid role, but I need to actually be present and I need to actually show myself and actually like be that COO that the company needs. So it's demanding. It's long hours, like daily, like defining what the problems are and finding solutions. Like I work nowadays realistically with a multitude of businesses, not just in the hospitality, but way outside of hospitality. I work with law firms. I work with real estate. I work with wellness. I work with health. And the one thing you see in the same circle is what we've been saying like all along. Like all these people, they need leads that turn into money. And they actually can see the value of this one company out of all the companies that are out there, why this one is going to actually give them the right solution and the right answer they need to get where they want to like be, whatever they want to do, right? Like if it's fitness, like how is this gym going to make me lose weight versus all these other guys, or like wellness? I mean, like how are these guys going to like make my Botox work better than these other guys that actually offer the same thing for half the price? Like,
yeah, no, absolutely. Especially in Miami, dude. I mean, it's Botox Central. But Humberto, quick question. So you've worked with different industries, different CEOs now, yeah. Especially being a fractional COO for these companies, inserting yourself. I love that concept, dude. I think it's a really great concept. So what would you say, okay, is a common trait that you have seen with winners that they have in common?
I would say a common trait within everyone that turn into a winning case study, being willing to actually learn, being willing to make changes, to not know it all and not... not be above the solutions. Like sometimes you actually have solutions so simple right in front of your face. Like and sometimes like a doctor will actually feel like so above that level. Like
they don't want to handle it.
They don't want that, exactly. And at that point, like it doesn't matter what solution you present. Like you're not gonna see a change. And the better outcomes I've had have been like from. On the different levels of friction and different levels of challenges that I've seen, like the one of the more standard sets I've seen that actually have been a common winning token have been that I actually like willing to be open and implement changes. And
I love that. It has to do with your core values then. Your core values of, you know, being able to adapt,
correct,
have resilience. If something doesn't work, you adapt. And no, I agree, dude. Some of the best people that I know, they know how to adapt very fast. You know, success loves speed.
Yep.
So let me ask you, brother, with that being said, what role does mindset play with what you do right now on your day to day? Do you have like a routine to get yourself prepared? Do you think that, you know, there's something that entrepreneurs must do like on a weekly or daily basis to prepare their mindset? Because mindset's everything, right?
Of course.
The premises of this podcast is the level up, but a lot of it is motivation, self-help, that to help people go ahead and go do and live that life by design, right? So what would you say is something that you... you know, value in your life that you're like, you know what, this has worked for me, for my mindset that can help others?
Of course. So for me, I mean, at 4:30, I have a nice bath ready where I, no, I'm joking.
I thought you were about to pull like an Andy Elliott, bro.
No. For me, I mean, I try to like have a somewhat of a routine. Yes, I find if I don't follow that routine, my day can actually go to.
What's your routine?
Fit a workout a day, like try to fit it in the morning. Mm-hmm. Try to fit it as early as I can in the morning, just to get it out of the way. Mm-hmm. Like if I don't get it out of the way early enough, my day is likely going to get like very congested, very complicated, and I'm not going to get to it. And it really like gets my mind clear. It gets my mind running. Mm-hmm. So that's one part I actually like try to do. I also try to do meditation. I heard so many people back in the day talking about meditation and never gave it enough respect or value. And I've learned over time, like, I mean, like your mind, your brain, your well-being, like it's just as important to train as it is like training your physique, right? And I mean, like, really like giving yourself 5 minutes of mindfulness is very, very significant. It centers you. It actually like allows you to think better and answer better. Like eliminate anger, eliminate stress. I mean, is every day rainbows and butterflies? No. I mean, like some days are very stressful. Like we like in dealing with different industries, we deal with a lot of different challenges. Some challenges are easy to conquer, and some challenges are just like ginormous. How do we conquer it? How do we actually make a difference? And like it all starts with us and how we take care of ourselves. Like sleep, I try to actually like sleep is huge. I never actually like perhaps from the hospitality and nightlife industry, I never understood how important it was, as I was going to bed usually at 7-8 a.m.
Yeah.
Thinking this was normal, like, oh, yeah. Like, what's the difference? Like, no, it actually makes a difference. Like,
huge.
You want to rest. You want to actually feel energized. You want to wake up optimized.
Mm-hmm.
I try to ensure, like, my bed setting is solid. Like, everything is actually, like, good. I have a good, nighttime routine. Like, take care of my skin. Like, the past year alone, like I've been working a lot with my wife into wellness,
mm-hmm.
and in that, I mean, like trying out different things, red light therapy, ice cold bath. We have a setup at home for both, and it's actually very, very nice. It re-energizes you as you actually go through it, not to like try to compare it to the meme, right? Like, oh, like I wake up and I prepare my water, and all that.
Oh, but
with
Ashton Hall. Yeah.
But hey, to some degree, that it really makes a difference for the mindset you're gonna carry the rest of the day.
Absolutely, you feel good. You feel perform good. Good.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's great, man. All right, and last question I got for you: what does leveling up mean to you right now in this season of your life, brother?
I want to say to me, stay hungry. Staying hungry, staying motivated, always wanting to step it up. I think especially in this current environment, a technological environment where like so many cool changes are happening in the AI world, like not wanting to be involved, not understanding the opportunities to actually be involved, is a very, very big missed opportunity. I decided, for instance, over the past year, I've been working on getting a couple of masters. I'm getting right now a master's in artificial intelligence and digital marketing. I'm getting a master's in global data.
Mm-hmm.
I'm receiving a doctorate in July on marketing and organizational leadership in California. I try to like stay as relevant and involved anywhere I can, and like I try to stay hungry. And it takes a lot of time, like. Not necessarily what I want to be doing right now, like just be going to school or something.
Yeah.
And not everyone needs to do that. I mean, like you have a lot of resources and tools, like easy tools to actually access online on Google. Like,
mm-hmm.
like you have 12-year-old kids that probably do like 10 times what I can do in so many ways, like so easily. But point to the story, like, yeah, you do have all that information and all that easy access to opportunities out there. If someone is not taking it, it's really like a shame, because like it's not hard to, not like it's not 2002 where like you didn't have anything other than encyclopedias or something, and maybe like
facts.
If you actually like try to use altavista.com or something, maybe you could find something like eventually Google enter and, but yeah, that's I think my main takeaway on that.
On leveling up. I love that, brother. Good for you, dude. Yeah. Like I respect anybody that goes back to school, gets their master's or their doctorates. And dude, you got to stay up to type, because the next 5 years for AI is going to be huge.
Absolutely.
It's going to be huge. So good for you, dude. All right. So for the audience right now that's watching, Humberto, tell them right now in the camera where they can find you. Drop your IG handle, your company's websites, so they can come ahead and actually do business with you if they want to do business with you. And if you guys feel motivated like I do, you guys want to go ahead and start your own charter, a yacht charter, man, in Miami. I mean, this is the guy. This is the guy. He was able to do it during COVID and was able to blow it up. So you got to go pick his brain, man. And we got to talk more about the nightclub industry, bro, I love that industry. It's awesome. It's awesome. Humble beginnings. So where find you, brother?
Well, my personal IG is HDC Hub. I'm fairly accessible there. It's a public profile. I don't have it all that active. I'm usually a little more on the busy side, but that's my main handle. And the company handle is Downtown Consulting. Mm-hmm. Downtown as a DWNTWN Downtown Consulting.
There you guys go. Cool. So you guys have access to Downtown Consulting. You also have access to Humberto Dominguez. Guys, he was in a multi-billion-dollar nightclub industry with groups like Tao Group, The Wind Group, out in Vegas, now transitioning to Miami, over here doing his own business, now with yacht charters and doing fractional COO work. Guys, so if you guys need any consulting, this is the man you guys got to go to. Once again, guys, this is Paul Alex, the Level Up Podcast, the number two business podcast in the United States right now. Guys, make sure to leave us a review. Make sure to share this with a friend that needs some inspiration, guys. All right, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for listening up to the Level Up Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to share with a family, friend, and everyone you know who's ready to level up. Leave a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you tune in. It really helps spreading the word. And don't forget to check out officialpaulalex.com for more episodes and resources to kickstart your journey. Let's level up together.